that we notice. Okay, so that's the physics of spin. Those are the experiments. And now based upon those experiments, what we would like to do is we would like to build in our minds a more mathematical description of what's going on. And the reason we're doing that is, well, maybe I should say it this way. If we build a mathematical description of what's going on, you will see that mathematics is a very, very powerful tool. And it allows us to make predictions of things that we might never have guessed. Okay, so that's the point of all of this. Okay, so what we're going to do is take those experiments, put them into a mathematical form, and see if we predict something new. So that's the idea. So the first thing is spin seems to be a vector. So how many of you have studied a little bit about vectors? Okay, so most of you know a little bit about a vector. So a vector is basically a line segment that's directed. Okay, and that makes sense. If this guy is spinning around like this, then we can say that its axis of spin is that way. Or if it's spinning like this, its axis of spin is that way. So it's like a directed line segment. Okay, so that's the kind of mathematics that first comes to mind. Okay, it turns out that spin is not a vector. Okay, it's something more subtle than that. But let's just start with basics. So it seems to be a vector. Okay, so it seems to be, if it's spinning around like this direction, then the axis is that way. Okay, and that axis of spin can point in any direction. Okay, I can make this guy axis of spin point in any direction. Oops, in any direction. Okay, so what do we know about vectors? Okay, so let's see. So we have unit basis vectors. So in this two-dimensional space here, okay, this is like the plane of the blackboard here, I can draw one vector like this, which is a directed line segment from there to there, and the length of it is 1. Okay, and we call that x with a little hat on top of it. Okay, and similarly y hat in the perpendicular direction. Now the point of introducing this x hat and y hat, you'll see shortly, okay, but just in terms of simple vectors, what we use that for is it then is possible to express any vector. So here's a vector. That means a line segment of a certain length pointing in some direction, which we'll call v with a little arrow on top. That's a vector. Okay, we can represent any vector as a linear combination of this vector and this vector. Okay, so here's an example. Okay, so what I can do is I can take this vector x hat and I can multiply it by the number, say, 1.3. So that takes the same vector and scales it up in size to now 1.3 times as long. So a is the number 1.3. So 1.3 times x hat is this guy over here. Okay, now I take that vector and I'm going to add it to a second vector. The second vector is take this y unit vector, multiply it by some number b, which looks like about 2.2 here. Okay, so double the size of this guy and a little more. And then take that vector and add it to that vector. Add those two green vectors. And you probably know how to add two vectors together. And the resultant vector is this v. Okay, so that's what I mean by taking, you can construct any vector by v by taking a linear combination of x hat and y hat. Okay, so that's really important. Okay, so anyway, so now we say, we can also talk about this, about the length of this guy. So the length of this vector is just by Pythagoras' theorem, we know that it's this length. Since x has length 1, that green arrow there has length a. So this side of the rectangle is a. That side of the rectangle has length b. So the diagonal is just a squared plus b squared. Okay, and a unit vector is something which has length 1. Okay, and so that means that a and b, whatever those two numbers are, they must be such that the square of a plus the square of b is equal to 1. Okay. So the general solution to that is just a has to be cosine theta and b has to be sine theta for some angle theta. How many of you are following this? Does this seem reasonable? Are you okay with this? Okay. All right. So the general solution to that is just an angle theta. And so our vector then becomes cos theta. So we take the unit vector x hat, we multiply by this number, and then we take the unit vector y hat multiply by that number. We get these two little vectors. We add them up. And what we end up with, of course, is a vector whose length is 1. So it lies somewhere on the unit circle at some angle theta. And theta is the angle that appears in there. Okay, so I'm hoping that that's pretty clear. Because now what we're going to do is we're going to see that we're going to try to use this kind of mathematical technology to wrap our minds around those experimental results. Okay, and you're going to see something really weird come out. Okay, so here are some examples of writing a unit vector in that form. Okay, suppose we take theta equals 0. Cosine of 0 is what? 1. Sine of 0 is? Okay, so the answer is just v is just x hat. Okay, so there it is. And so we have our vector, which just points in the x hat direction. Okay, when theta is 90 degrees, what's cos 90? What's sine 90? Okay, and so we have a vector in the pure y hat direction, which is just that guy. And if theta is 45, what's cos 45? Root 2 over 2, or just 1 over root 2. What's sine 45? Same thing. Okay, so our vector is going to be 1 over root 2 in the x hat direction and 1 over root 2 in the y hat direction. Okay, now, I understand that that is not a square root symbol. Okay, so, you know, I spent like about 2 hours trying to fix this problem, and then I thought, you know what? These guys are smart enough to be able to instantly build a little code in their head so that as soon as they see that symbol, it actually translates into the square root symbol. Okay, so let's just leave it at that. All right, so we can just check, like for example, in this case over here, we can check that it's a unit vector. And we do that by saying we need to take this thing squared plus this thing squared has to equal what? Has to equal 1. Okay, so 1 over root 2 squared is a half. Plus a half is equal to 1. Okay, so that's simple. These are very simple ideas. Okay, so there we go. So let's apply these ideas to spin. See how far we get and see where we have to fix things. Okay, so the first question would be, what is the analog, or what are we going to use as the analog of our x hat and y hat basis vectors? Okay, so what we've got so far is we've got these two basis vectors, x hat, y hat, and we can represent any vector, a vector pointing in any direction in the plane of this blackboard as a linear combination of those two basis vectors. So what we're really looking for are basis vectors. What are the two basis vectors going to be in the case of a spinning particle? Sorry? R hat and theta hat. So R hat and theta hat would be, where's the chart? Okay, so there are all kinds of different basis vectors that we could use. So one of them is, at any given point, we could take a vector of length 1 that's pointing in the radial direction and a vector of length 1 that's pointing tangent to the circle. Okay, so any vector, say this vector over here, can be written as, you know, a little bit of this guy and a little bit of that guy, and we can get any vector. Okay, so this is called r hat, and that's called theta hat. Okay, so that was the answer. So that's not what we want. What could we take as basis vectors? What do we sort of mean physically? We need two basis vectors. What is one of the main results of this Stern-Gerlach apparatus? What comes out of the Stern-Gerlach apparatus? Any Stern-Gerlach apparatus. I put atoms in with totally random spins, orientations, and what comes out is what? Two streams. There's always two streams. One of them is in the up direction and one is in the down direction relative to the orientation of the Stern-Gerlach. So what are we going to take as our basis vectors? Zero or one? Say again? Up or down. Okay, so we will take up or down as our, so coming out of any Stern-Gerlach, so here's my Stern-Gerlach apparatus, right? I feed in a beam of atoms that are totally randomly oriented. If the magnetic field in my Stern-Gerlach apparatus is, say, pointing up and down, then no matter what comes in, I always get exactly two beams, one in the up direction and one in the down direction. Okay, and what we said is the one going in the up direction corresponds to an atom that is spinning this way, or an electron in an atom spinning that way. And the atoms in the lower beam have an electron that's spinning in that direction. Okay, so these would be our two physical basis states. The analog of x hat and y hat would be those two states. Okay, so quantization of spin suggests that when an atom is in this state, spinning upwards, we call that this is like x hat, so to speak. Okay, and similarly, when the atom is spinning down, when it's in this lower beam, we say that's the analog of y hat. So now we have two basis vectors, this guy and this guy. Okay? And so here comes the key question that we're going to try to answer. Okay? It is true that obviously I've got this oven over here producing this beam of silver atoms, and the direction of spin is totally random. Okay? So if this is in fact a basis, okay, just like we can represent any vector as a linear combination of x hat and y hat, the question is, can we represent an atom that's spinning in just some random arbitrary direction, can we also represent that as simply a linear combination of the analog of x hat and y hat? So we take some number a times spin up plus some number b times spin down. Can we form a linear combination that will reproduce all directions, that will represent an atom spinning in all possible directions? Are you following this? Yeah? We're OK? All right. So this is crucial. So this is the game that we're playing. And the question is, how can we choose A and B so that this makes sense? Okay, and we're going to see that it's actually a little bit tricky. Okay, so that's the idea. So the first thing is we should say something about sort of the magnitudes of this A and B. Okay, the probability suggests that the A and B, whatever those numbers are, and however those numbers correspond to the direction of the spin, it should be true that A squared plus B squared is equal to 1. Okay? So what we're saying here is, okay, I got this atom like this, and suppose it happens to be spinning in that direction, its axis is in that direction. There will be two numbers, A and B, for which this mathematical expression represents that physical spin state. If the atom happens to come out of that that oven pointing, say, that way, I will have a different pair of numbers, A and B, which mathematically represent that physical direction of spin. Okay, but the point is, no matter which direction it comes out, the sum of the squares of A and B should add to 1. Okay, and the reason is this sort of thing. Okay, so we've got this atom coming in, and its spin direction, its physical spin direction, is something like that or whatever, that direction. Okay, and it goes flying through this Stern-Gerlach apparatus. And what we know about it is that no matter what direction it comes in at, it will always split into one of two beams. Okay, and we saw that when it's spinning up, then it goes into this guy with 100% probability and this with 0. Okay, if it comes in initially spinning down, then when it passes through, none of the atoms go into the upper beam and all of them go into the lower beam, 0 and 100%. Okay, and when it comes in sideways, we noticed 50-50. Okay, in all cases, it adds up to 100%. Okay, so the point is, no matter what A and B are, it has to be such that A squared plus B squared equals 1. Are we happy with that? Okay, right. Okay, so this is just a reminder here of what I just said. Okay, so 100% up, 0% down. So in this case, we would have that A squared is equal to 1 and B squared is equal to 0. Okay, in the other case, where the atom comes in, happens to be spinning down, then when it passes through the Stern-Gerlach, all of the atoms go in the down beam and none of them go in the up beam. Okay, so in this case, what's A squared? 0. What's B squared? Okay, so there we go. All right, now what if it comes in horizontally into one of these Stern-Gerlachs that's pointing magnetic field up and down? Okay, so now we got 50-50. What is A squared? Half. So A squared has to be a half, and then B squared also has to be a half, so that A squared plus B squared is equal to 1. Okay, so then A and B are both 1 over root 2. Okay, so now the point is, if we have an electron, an atom whose spin direction is coming out, then we would represent So this is the physical situation, a real physical atom that's spinning like this and moving through space. We represent it mathematically in this rather sort of abstract form of some number times up plus some number times down. These are our two bases elements, and that's our linear combination. And the numbers in front are 1 over root 2 and 1 over root 2. Okay, it's equally likely to be up as it is down, okay, after going through the Stern-Gerlach. All right, so we've translated the physics into the mathematics. Okay, so summary, where are we at? So if the atom is spin is pointing up, okay, then we represent it as A is just equal to 1, so it's a full up plus 0 times down. Okay, if the atom is spinning towards us, okay, then we say, oh yes, 1 over root 2 up plus 1 over root 2 down. So that when we square these guys, they're the same number. They're both 50% probability of up, 50% probability of down. Okay, and similarly down here, well, that's just full down. It's 1 times the down plus 0 times the up basis state. Okay, so that's that. So now comes the key question here, and here's where we have to think. Okay? Of course, you weren't thinking before, right? Right, okay. So we know how to represent, or we're guessing here. I mean, a lot of this, we're just guessing. That's how physics works. Okay, lots of guessing. We're trying to, we see some physical phenomena. We try to guess what the mathematics is that's behind it. Okay? So what we've guessed is, for these states, up, sideways, and down, that's the mathematical representation. The question now is, what if it's at some angle in between? Okay, what are these numbers A and B going to be here? Cosine theta? Good. Okay, so theta is the angle between the z-axis and the spin direction. Okay, so in terms of this 3D picture, z is up like this, x is coming out at you, and I've got an atom whose spin is oriented somewhere along this directions in this plane. Okay, so that's theta equals 0, that's theta equals 90 degrees, that's theta equals 180 degrees. Okay? So you're thinking cosine theta and sine theta for A and B. Okay? So that's a good guess, because we know that cosine theta squared plus sine theta squared is equal to, it's identically equal to 1. No matter what angle you stick in there, that's just a trig identity, right? So this is a very good guess. Okay? However, well, let's just see if it works. Okay? So first of all, when theta is equal to 0, what's cos theta? Okay, first of all, sorry, when theta is 0, that means physically we've got an atom whose spin direction is up. So physically it corresponds to this case. And we expect the first coefficient, this guy here, to equal 1, and this second one to equal 0. What if we stick in theta equals 0 in here? What do we get? Okay, so that works. Okay? Okay, so one data point works. Okay, let's try another one. Let's try, let's try this way. Okay, sideways here. So what is the angle theta here when it's coming out at you? How many degrees?
90.
Okay, what's cosine of 90?
Zero.
What's sine of 90? 1. Okay, so when it's horizontal like this, this formula is saying that we should have a 0 here and a 1 here. Where do we have a 0 and a 1 in the case where it's pointing down? So there's something wrong with this formula. Our guess is not right. Someone have a better guess. Here's what we got to think.
Is it the middle one?
What do you mean the middle one?
That one.
So that's what we're trying to get. We're trying to get when theta is 90 degrees, we would like, whatever we write down over here, we would like that when we stick in theta equals 90 degrees, for this to be 1 over root 2 and this to be 1 over root 2. Okay? Right now, when we stick in 90 degrees, we find 0 and 1. Okay? We want 1 over root 2 and 1 over root 2.
Formula is the cos of theta half and half theta and the sine of half.
Yeah! Half angles. Okay, so it's not cosine and sine of theta, it's cosine and sine of theta divided by 2, a half angle. Okay, this half angle is super important. Okay, in fact, these are called spin half particles, and the half is precisely this half that appears in here. Okay, it's very, very important. Okay, so let's see if this works now. First of all, for any theta, what is cos squared plus sine squared? 1. Okay? So now when we stick in theta equals 0, say this case, cosine of 0 over 2 is 1, which is that number. Sine of 0 over 2 is 0. Let's stick in 90 degrees. Cosine of 90 over 2 is 1 over root 2. Sine of 90 over 2 is sine of 45 is 1 over root 2. What about the last case? When we stick in 180 degrees, what do we get? What's cos of 180 over 2? That's cos of 90 is 0. Cosine of 180 over 2, sine of 90 is 1. Fantastic. Okay, by sticking that factor of half in there, it looks like we can certainly reproduce all three cases here. Okay? And so we have great confidence in this formula, right? How many of you have great confidence in this formula? Tell me you're unsure.
Good.
Okay. Yeah.
And fungus.
What about the ones in between?
Yeah,
you
haven't got any
of these. So what we've considered is all in-betweens between up and down like this, along this, in this plane. So now are you asking about other angles? Is that what you mean?
It's between 0 and 90.
So here is between, I see. So let's try 45.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to see 45 a little bit later. But so if we stick in 45, it's 45 over 2. What's close to 45 over 2? Come on, you guys, don't you have that in your head? So close to 22.5 and all that stuff. So we will see these numbers come out a little bit later. Okay, so there we go. So here's the result. Here's our formula. And so here's an example. In fact, here we have an example. When theta is 60 degrees, okay, so that means we've gone 60 degrees from vertical, which is about like that. Okay. So now cosine of 60 divided by 2 is cos 30. Cos 30 is root 3 over 2. Okay. And sine of 60 over 2, sine of 30 is 1/2. Okay, so now let's check. It should be true that that number squared plus that number squared is equal to 1. Okay, so root 3 over 2 squared is 3/4, and 1/2 squared is 1/4. 3/4 plus 1/4 is 1. Okay, so if our atom happens to be spinning in that direction at 60 degrees, and it enters this Stern-Gerlach apparatus, we, as in any Stern-Gerlach, it always splits into two, but then there's the question of probabilities. Okay, it's in what we find is root 3 over 2 squared is 75%, 1 over 2 squared is 25%. So in other words, if the atom is if it's straight up or straight down, it's basically 100% and 0 or the other way around. If it's coming out horizontally, it's exactly 50-50. This is not quite horizontal. This is a little bit above horizontal. So there should be a little bit more probability that it's going to be flipped into the vertical as opposed to the up as opposed to the down. Okay, so now we find out in fact that it's 75 and 25. Okay, so it's most likely to come out here in transformed into the up state and only a small probability into the down state. Okay, so that intuitively makes sense, right? Does it look like it's working so far?
Yeah.
Are we kind of okay with this? This is happy, we're okay. Right. So at the end of the day then, it seems as if we've constructed a successful model of spin, a mathematical model of spin. So we've taken our physics, converted it into mathematics. Okay, and in fact, it is true. This is, in fact, exactly the right mathematics. Okay. Now comes the key question. Yes, what's the key question?
How do you go past 180? Because doesn't the spin kind of mirror and you get the wrong result?
That's right. So. So if we go past 180, we'll talk about going past 180 shortly.
Okay,
that's a very good question. Okay, so we've got, in fact, that's what we're talking about right now. So we've constructed this mathematical model. What's really, really important to understand about the process of physics, how is physics done? How physics is done is you look at the world, you get some sense for how things might be happening, you transform that into the language of mathematics, and then you play with that mathematics, and you push that mathematics. Okay, so that's what happens with general relativity. Okay, so Einstein, comes up with a mathematical description of gravity, and then we push the mathematics as far as we can. Okay, it's always like this. So now what we're going to do is we're going to push this mathematics as far as we can and see if we can break it. Okay, so that's the next step. Okay, so does the mathematics that we've got predict anything we didn't think of? Okay, that's the really cool thing. And very often in physics, or often enough to be useful to say, it turns out that mathematics, if you push the mathematics, it does predict interesting new things. Okay, so here we go. So this is blah, blah. The slogan is the power of mathematics in the process of science. Okay. So here we've got something that's so the atom is in the spin up state here, and we say that mathematically it looks like that. Okay, it's just the number one times our up state. Okay, so that's simple. Okay, and when we rotate this thing to 90 degrees, okay, so we've gone from up to 90 degrees like this, the state of it changes from that to that. Now we've got a 1 over root 2 there and a 1 over root 2 there. Okay, when we rotate it to down to 180 degrees, we know that it's 0 in the up and it's all fully in the down with a plus 1 there.
Awesome.
Okay, so now here comes the question. Answer to the question, what if we go past 180 degrees? Okay, so if we go to, I shouldn't have shown that. If we go to 270 degrees, tell me what these numbers are.
170.
Where are they?
One.
Okay. So one of them is minus. Is that right? This first one is minus? And the second one is? Positive or negative?
Positive.
Okay. So if you plug that in, so what is this? This is cosine of theta over 2. Theta is 90 plus 90 plus 90. Theta is 270. Half of 270 is 135. Cosine of 135 is cosine of that angle. So it's negative, and it's 1 over root 2. Sine of 135 is positive. 1 over root 2. Okay, so we introduce a minus sign here. Okay, well, whatever. Okay, let's go all the way around. Okay, if we stick in 360 degrees down here, what are we going to get here and here? So cosine of 360 over 2 is cosine of 180. Cosine of 180 is negative 1. So we're going to have a negative 1 here. And sine of 180 is 0. Okay, so we're going to get that. Okay? So, does that seem odd to you, that minus sign?
Yeah.
Okay, so what it's saying is something rather bizarre. It's saying that, let me put it this way. So suppose that this is my little spinning electron over here. Okay, if I take this object and this spinning electron here, and I turn it around through 360 degrees, you would expect that it has returned to exactly the same state. In other words, if I had this thing spinning and I put it behind my back, okay, there are two things that I can do. I can either leave it in exactly the same state, or I can turn it through 360 degrees. And if I pull it out now again and ask you to tell me the difference, have I rotated it or not, you would not be able to tell the difference, right? What this is saying is that if I take an electron and rotate it through 360 degrees, it actually becomes a different, the state of it is different, okay? And the state changes by a minus sign. And so the question is, can you actually are there physically real, measurable consequences of that minus sign? If there aren't, okay, well, that's just sort of behind the scenes mathematics. If there are physically real manifestations of this, that is pretty freaky. Okay? Imagine an object that, okay, well, let's just go on a little bit here. So in other words, to get back to the same state, so if we rotate it around once through 360, we get a minus sign. If we rotate it around twice, then we're going to get another minus sign, and that minus times minus is a plus, and we end up with a plus one. So what is being said here is that an electron is an object that you can't just turn around once to bring it into the same state. You have to turn it around twice before it becomes the same object it was before, indistinguishable from what it was before. So the key point here is that an electron is not like, first of all, it's not like just a spinning top. It's not like an object. It's not like a baseball that's made really, really small. There's something fundamentally quirky about an electron, and indeed all particles. All spin half or spin odd multiples of half. Okay? So that's really slow. The mysterious minus sign. Okay. So when theta is 0, we get that. When theta is 360, we get this minus sign. Okay, and we have to rotate it twice around to get a plus sign. Alright? So basically, this can be observed experimentally. Does anyone, can anyone suggest an experiment that I could do to observe this? Where are we at time-wise?
It's almost break.
Almost time, break time. Okay, so can we find a way to observe this experimentally? Can you make a suggestion?
Find someone that's good.
Okay.
Wait, can we use those boxes to get it to turn?
Yeah, we could use those boxes. Here's a simpler experiment. Okay, here's a very simple experiment. It's actually so conceptually it's a very simple experiment. Technically it's a bit tricky to do. It was first done in the 1970s. Do you remember? This is the neutron. In the 1970s, I believe, it was when it was done. So this is the nature, this is the experimental setup. This is totally amazing. Okay, so what we have is a source of particles here. Okay, we have a source of particles whose spin is the same as the spin of the electron. Okay, it turns out that the particles we're using here are neutrons. Okay, so you take neutrons. A neutron is an object that has no electric charge, but nevertheless, it behaves like a little spinning bar magnet. It has a north-south bar magnet, and the thing spins around. So it's exactly like the particles we're talking about here. Okay, and the claim is that if I take that neutron, and if I rotate it around through 360, it's not the same state. I have to rotate it around two times to get it to return to the same state. And how do we measure that? Well, we have this beam of neutrons coming in. And the experiment the setup we have is, of course, a double slit experiment. Okay? And then we have a screen. Okay? Now, if we do this double slit experiment, we're going to get some kind of an interference pattern here. Okay, basically all particles, whether they're electrons, neutrons, protons, atoms, or whatever, as long as they're small at an atomic scale, all particles, we will observe this de Broglie relationship. Okay, and we're going to observe an interference pattern here. The interference pattern looks something like that. Okay, so that's what we talked about on day one of our quantum lectures. Okay, and this is the center here. Okay, so that's just plain old neutrons that we fire in there. Okay, now we're going to modify the experiment a little bit. Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to recognize that, say, for example, for a neutron to hit the screen at that location, quantum theory is telling us that the neutron, in getting from there to there, exists simultaneously in two paths. One of them is the upper path. Okay, and one of them is the lower path. Okay? And we get a maximum there because basically if we follow a wave that starts out like this, then if a wave crest starts here, going along here, and a wave crest at the same time starts here, those two wave crests will arrive at the same time. Okay, so if one wave crest is positive, then the other wave crest will be positive. We add two wave crests and we get a maximum there. Okay, maximum probability that it's going to hit there. Okay. So now what we're going to do, so now tell me what we're going to do. How are we going to measure this mysterious minus sign?
You put something that will take the angle to 360 degrees. So what you observe is if you put only that thing only at one slit, then you won't really get an interference pattern because the neutrons are distinguishable.
Very close, almost exactly right. So what we want to do is we want to insert a device, a magical device, inside the second beam, inside, say, the lower beam. Let me draw that in a nice fancy color. Okay, we insert a magical device, just a black box for now. I'm going to ask you how it works in a second. So this is some device, and what it does is it grabs onto the neutron as the neutron is flying into this lower beam here, and so it spends some time in this apparatus, and this apparatus in some way grabs onto that neutron and just physically rotates it through 360 degrees. It turns it end over end. Okay. So if the neutron came in and it was, say, spinning, say, in that direction, then as it passes through the apparatus, it tumbles it around, okay, like this, through 360 degrees, so then it comes popping out in exactly the same direction, 360 degrees. Okay. So what one might expect if one didn't know about all this weird stuff is that you would see exactly the same pattern. You haven't done anything, right? You're doing the exact same experiment before, and the neutrons in this lower beam, well, okay, all you're doing is you're taking them and you're rotating them through 360 degrees. But they're exactly the same as they were before. And so you'd expect nothing to happen here. What is the effect of this minus sign, do you think? Minimum, right. So the effect is, if this guy, if we start out with two wave crests here, okay, one of them going this along the upper path and one of them going on the lower path, the upper one, suppose that the upper one hits as a crest over here, when the moment that this guy crest hits over here, if we have a minus sign, we convert a crest to a trough, right? I mean, it's just a wave is like this, right? This is positive and that's negative. That's below the axis. If I multiply this by a minus sign, I flip it around. A crest becomes a trough, and a trough becomes a crest. Okay, so these two crests come in like this. The crest here is flipped to a trough, and when they add up here, you're taking a plus and you're adding it to a minus, and in fact, you should just get a zero. You should get zero probability. And so that minus sign has the effect of interchanging maxima with minima. A maximum becomes a minimum. A minimum, which used to be crest and trough meeting to cancel, now becomes crest and crest, or trough and trough. And so it becomes a maximum. So now we get a maximum there, a minimum there, and the pattern shifts exactly one position, one notch. Okay? So this is a real physical manifestation. I take these neutrons, I rotate them through 360 degrees, my common sense tells me there ain't no difference between the neutrons now, and I shouldn't have observed anything, but you find that the pattern physically shifts. It's an easily measured shift. Like, just, it's obvious. It's like right there in your face. Yeah.
Do you have to rotate them 360 degrees on both paths or just one?
Just on one, because if you rotated it on both of them, you would introduce a minus sign on both of them. This crest would become a trough, and that crest would become a trough, so you'd have two troughs add up. You still get a maximum. Okay. So the key is that you rotate only one of them. And then, of course, if you now design this apparatus to rotate to 720 degrees, and you send the electron on through, the neutron on through, then the pattern shifts back to the original one. Okay, and this experiment has actually been done, and so that minus sign really is present, and you can actually see physical consequences of it, and it's a very important phenomenon. Okay, so blah blah blah, most important minus sign in the entire universe. And finally, it obviously has no common sense explanation. How is it possible rotating something to 360 degrees changes it? Okay, why do you have to do it twice? Okay, that's a fundamentally quirky aspect of our universe that turns out to be a consequence of two things. And this is what Dirac showed in 1928. Absolutely brilliant. He combined special relativity, he combined quantum ideas with special relativity. And it just is the nature of space-time, all those space-time diagrams and length contraction, time dilation, all those weird properties of space mixed up with these weird properties of quantum, in particular superposition. You take all that stuff, you mix it up, and it says that the universe must have particles in it that behave this way. They are objects which you have to rotate around twice to become the same again. Okay? Very cool.